sometimes I wish we had a camera in here. Oh, you'll just have to use your imagination about what people were doing during that last piece of music. Good morning. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Welcome to The Conversation. And you were dancing in your chair there a little bit.
Well, to the degree that I do, yeah.
Well,
wobbling slightly is how I would describe it.
But. Well, that's okay. It was just nice to see you enjoying a little bit of music.
That's right.
We left the rest of it to Milner over there.
So we've been seeing some pretty free interpretations of the power of the federal government lately.
And no doubt we're going to see more of them. But as we talk about the government, it's a little helpful to get clarity on what we mean when we're talking about big government. Now, one of the first things you'll remember that Donald Trump did as president was to put a hiring freeze on federal employees. That once again raised the issue of the federal bureaucracy as too big and wasteful. And that's one of the things that congressional Republicans really like. It's a traditional Republican promise to downsize government, and it has philosophical buy-in from much of the public. But according to a Brookings Institution study, the federal hiring freeze makes some important and often wrong assumptions about both the size of the federal government and how it really works. Contributing editor Neil Milner had a look, and he joins us now. Good morning.
I guess I have to bring some gravitas to this operation. Is that right?
Well, you know,
a little bit of
perspective and some reality about what it really means when we talk about big government.
Let's do it.
So are we talking about in terms of, you know, spending? Because clearly we're watching spending increase. Or are we talking about, you know, the people side of it?
Here is the essence of the study, which was done by John DiLullio, a well-known political scientist, and he did it for that. As far as spending is concerned, controlling for inflation, we spend, the federal government spends five times now than it did, say, 50 or 55 years ago. The other side of that makes it a puzzle is that the size of the bureaucracy is no bigger now than it was 50 years ago. And in fact, the Obama bureaucracy, that is the federal bureaucracy during Obama, was 200,000 employees less than it was during Reagan's second term. And what's most interesting is what explains this? How can you have a bureaucracy that stayed the same with the increase, vast increase in the amount of money that the Fed spend?
So we have fewer people and we're spending more.
Right. And we're spending more because there's so many more programs and so many more things that the federal government does, in fact, because people like it, than it did before. Law enforcement, involvement in education, seven new cabinet positions since the 1960s. So how is it able to do this? What's the magic here?
What is the magic then? If is it because we become just used to having these things that some would call, you know, entitlements, things that we say that we need or that we want or that have just grown up generationally and we think that they've just been institutionally part of government, which now people look at as being, you know, big government. But it seems that throughout time there was always this idea that is government getting too big? I mean, we've seen that clearly over the last 50 years. So what really is the magic that's making
well,
this happen?
It turns out to be kind of false magic, but this is the way it's done. It's done by proxy. That what the way that the federal government manages this vast increase in its involvement in politics is to farm things out. It farms things out to three different kinds of entities: state and local government, which does an enormous amount of work implementing the federal government's policies, like on Medicaid. Private contractors. There are now as many private contractors working in the defense industry for the government as there are DOD, Department of Defense employees. And finally, private nonprofits, charities and so on, get money from the feds essentially to implement federal programs. So what's really happened is that the money, a lot of the money that's increased goes for other people, non-federal bureaucrats, to make these programs work. And so that's how you keep the federal bureaucracy, that's how you keep big government small, by essentially having this kind of proxy operation.
But from what you've just described, it sounds more smoke and mirrors-like than necessarily scaling down government in real terms. You may have fewer employees, but all you've done is shift, you know, cost shift from here to there.
That's certainly the case. That's exactly what happens. Whether it's smoke and mirrors or not, it seems to me, depends to some extent on how effective this operation is. And so DeLulio looks at how effective it is. That is, there's nothing wrong necessarily. It could be more efficient doing it this way, that is letting somebody else implement the policies. And in fact, a conservative might say that's fine because it brings it closer to the grassroots.
But is it cheaper?
No. Well, not only is it not cheaper, when you look at the data, the General Accounting Office's programs, the most vulnerable, inefficient federal programs in the United States, 28 of the 32 are among the ones that have the most proxies, that is, that are run by people other than the federal government. And if you look at this list, it's a pretty formidable list. You name a thing that you're interested in having from government, and it's on that list. So what DeLulio is saying is, whether you want to call it smoke and mirrors or not, you're really not getting an efficient operation from here because this proxy kind of thing doesn't work. And then we get into the question was, why does it continue to exist?
Okay, but the idea that clearly we are not limiting government, what you're saying is based at least on this research, should be dispelled.
Well, I think that's right, and it should be dispelled for two very different kinds of reasons. One reason is that people want these things from government. DeLulio has a good term, and it's been used before. People tend to be philosophically conservative, that is, against big government, but in real life, liberal. They want all these things. And then he shows the data that's shown time and time again. It's they want more things from the federal government, including people who identify themselves as Republicans. So that's one side. The other side is, and so you have this thing out there that people demand stuff from government. The other side is that these proxies want to protect their own situation, too. So they lobby in behalf of the system. State employees don't want to lose their job. Private nonprofits don't want to lose the money that they get to implement programs. And private contractors depend upon this kind of money. So that's the dynamic that really goes on. So what you really don't have is smaller government. You have a smaller federal bureaucracy as the federal government increases. Has all these other kinds of not very efficient ways of doing things.
So what you're really saying is, let's not kid ourselves about this. We really have an over-leveraged America, not limited government.
And that's exactly the term he uses, over-leveraged. And what's, of course, important in all this is how potent the phrase big government is and how hiring freeze and all these kinds of things has so much resonance. It's no coincidence that Donald Trump started here because it has so much resonance. It also is highly unlikely that you could ever convince Donald Trump what the real situation is on the basis of anything like this kind of data.
But going back to the whole issue of the hiring freeze, though, implicit in what you've just said in all this is that, you know, freezing federal workforce, which is the same size today as it was in 1960, from what you've said and what the Brookings Institution research shows, is going to have no impact on federal spending.
Well, if I were a private contractor, I'd look forward to this as an opportunity, because if you freeze it and if you freeze it, there's either going to be some pretty disastrous kinds of things, like fewer air traffic controllers, which is going to happen. The IRS can't enforce its laws. Or you hire private, you go into this other proxy sector to do it, and then you have, at best, mixed results.
So what happens now? I mean, we have these same conversations over and over again.
Sure.
So ostensibly you're saying nothing's going to change?
No, I don't think anything will change. It's a pretty formidable thing to change, and it's there's all kinds of reasons why it's hard to implement federal programs. And it's not just about the fact that proxies aren't very good at it. That's really not the point. The point is that the process doesn't work very well. But the political risks of reform are so great and so complex that I don't think this kind of system is going to change. I can't imagine people saying that they want to give more money to the federal bureaucracy because they can do a better job. It's even hard to convince people to put more money into the IRS because the lack of auditors is costing the United States a great deal of money because they don't find the tax cheats and the people who inadvertently make tax mistakes.
So in the context of what we heard during the campaign of draining the swamp in Washington,
The swamp has been, right. I mean, you can fight about whether there's still fraud, waste, and abuse a little bit there. But the bigger issue is that the swamp, draining the swamp does not seem to be the real problem here. The real problem is to have a more effective way of managing the increased involvement in the federal government that people have wanted for years. And that's not going to change. You're not going to find people suddenly changing their attitudes toward Social Security or toward aid to their schools or toward local law enforcement, all these kinds of things. So nothing else is changing in any dramatic sort of way that would bring about a change in this kind of process. And I think this kind of process is the easy way out politically.
Neil Milner, thank you.
You're welcome.
Contributing editor Neil Milner joins us every other week for a look at the long view.